Well, hi everyone. My name's Adrian Watts. I'm one of the leaders of Trinity Church, and I'd like to add a warm welcome to you this evening. If you're a guest here tonight, then it's particularly great to have you with us. Well, we're going to have a look now at the real message of Christmas. And to help get us thinking, we are going to watch a short video. Well, this is this year's Christmas advert from Waitrose. It's set in a remote pub called the Tan Hill Inn. It's a real pub situated some 1,700 feet in the Yorkshire Dales. The ad tells a story of locals going to the pub for a Christmas drink, only to find that they're snowed in. Realising that they're going to be stuck there for Christmas lunch, concern sets in as the lights go out. That is until they realise the place is stocked with food from Waitrose. And so everybody works together to produce a delicious-looking Christmas dinner. The twist at the end is that as the rescue party arrives, they find that their rescue is not particularly welcome. It would seem that as the people look at the food on the table, they would prefer to stay and eat. It's a surprising story because it raises the idea that there may be some rescues that are not welcome. People are meant to be glad of a rescue. If you were trapped in a burning building and a fireman appeared on a ladder at the window and offered to take you to safety, you'd be glad. If you were drowning out at sea and a lifeboat pulled alongside you and a lifeguard offered a hand, you'd be glad to take it, wouldn't you? People are meant to be glad of a rescue. Yet the surprise here is that the rescue is unwelcome. Some of you will no doubt see some of the shortcomings of the advert. Even though they may unwelcome the rescue initially, once all the food's been eaten, they will surely want to get out. This particular pub has been snowed in some 50 times since 2005, and so presumably they're a little bit more prepared for this happening than is depicted in the ad. And the nearest Waitrose is some 1 hour 44 minutes away. And so how likely is it really that the owners of the pub would shop there? But that said, could there ever be a rescue that people would have good reason to reject? Would you ever reject a rescue? What reason might you have? Well, we're thinking tonight about the true message of Christmas. But what has Christmas got to do with being rescued? I mean, Christmas is all about giving, isn't it? But who was it that was given at the first Christmas, as it were? Well, listen again to what the angel said. "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour, who is Christ the Lord." Who was it who was born? A Saviour. A rescuer. Christmas is not about the birth of a child, but the birth of a very particular child. One who was to be a rescuer. Christmas is about being rescued. But from what? Well, normally in a story, the rescuer arrives near the end of the story. First, the scene is set. Then the problem is introduced, for which a rescue is required. And finally, the rescuer arrives. So, someone enters a building, a fire starts. The fire brigade arrives. Someone goes for a swim. They get into trouble. The lifeguard arrives. People go for a drink. They get snowed in. the mountain rescue arrives. And so it is with the message of the Bible. The arrival of the rescuer in the Bible is near the end of the story. The scene has already been set. The problem and therefore the need for rescue has been well established. So that Christmas tells the end of the story, when the rescuer arrives. But without the background, the rescue doesn't really make any sense. There is no need. The scene is set at the beginning of the Bible, where God is introduced as the creator. He makes everything. And as such, he is the rightful owner of everything. He made it, it's his. And in particular, he makes humanity. He made them, and therefore they belong to him. The problem comes when humanity declares self-ownership. Humanity decides that they do not belong to God, but themselves. It can be seen in the way that people say, "It's my body, my life. I can do with it what I want." We assert that I own myself. This is a problem because it is theft. We have stolen ourselves from somebody else. And that somebody else is God. Now, from God's point of view, this world is full of thieves. Not a very glamorous picture, is it? The consequences from stealing from our Creator are death and judgment. The reason the shepherds were terrified when the angel appears is because they thought that God had come to execute that judgment. But although God will come to judge, he came first to rescue. The angel tells us that the baby in the manger was that rescuer. To a world full of thieves under the judgment of God, God makes provision of a rescue. He sent his son Jesus as the rescuer. It's no surprise then that the angel's announcement is accompanied by great joy. The angel himself says, "I bring you good news of great joy." And when he had finished, a whole host of angels appear with him, praising God for the provision of this rescue. The whole mood of Christmas and this carols by candlelight is one of joy and celebration. I mean, who wouldn't welcome God's provision of a rescue? What possible reason could there be to reject such a rescue? Well, let's explore a few possibilities. One reason to reject this rescue is because we think there is no need for it. We think that we're in no danger, so that there is nothing to be rescued from. But if somebody steals from another person, we don't expect that to be overlooked. If somebody steals from another person, we expect there to be consequences. And if there are consequences from stealing from another person, how much more can we expect there to be consequences from stealing from God? Another reason to reject this rescue is because we think that God is just trying to spoil our fun. We're having a party down here, and this rescue is really an attempt to put a stop to it. But let's consider for a moment God's motives. I mean, at this point, we could reflect on the fact that as creator, God is a generous giver. He has given us life. But let us instead consider the cost of this rescue. For central to the rescue is the death of the rescuer. God sent his son to lay down his life. That it was in his death that the rescue took place. That in his death, he took the consequences of humanity's theft from God in order to provide forgiveness and to restore their relationship with their Creator. In the advert, we have no doubt about the motives of the mountain rescue team because of the risk they took to dig through the snow in the freezing cold. How much less reason do we have to doubt the motives of God, whose provision of the rescue cost him the life of his son? Still another reason to reject this rescue is because we don't want to be rescued. We prefer the idea of self-ownership. I want to do what I want to do. It's my human right. But what about God's rights? In particular, God's right of ownership of what he has made. Rather than thinking that God is infringing our rights, could it not be that we might be infringing his right to own us? Well, one thing in common with all these reasons to reject the rescue is that they're based on misrepresentations of who God is. You know, when God is misrepresented as either not truthful, not good, not rightly sovereign, then there are plenty of reasons not to welcome his rescue. But when you understand God as he's made himself known, true, good, rightly sovereign, then the response of his provision of rescue can be nothing other than joyful welcome. Misrepresentations of God are not uncommon. And that's because we all have a tendency to think about God in our own way. But what is interesting is that this attitude is never permissible in any other relationship. So why is it legitimate when we think about God? Suppose you and I end up chatting at the end of this meeting. If I've not met you before, I might ask you your name, where you're from, what you're doing for Christmas. But supposing that rather than listen to you, I were to make up answers to those questions. I make up your name. I make up where you're from. I make up what you're doing for Christmas. Now, it would be a bit weird, but profoundly unrelational, and actually really quite rude not to be bothered to get to know you properly. Now, here's the thing. If it's inappropriate to make up what we think about one another, how much more inappropriate is it when we make up what we think about God? Like any other relationship that we have, we should expect God to tell us what he is like. And the Christian claim is not only that the God of the Bible is the God who makes himself known, but that because of Jesus, we can be rescued and have our relationship with him restored. Well, if you'd like the opportunity to learn more about this God, then you might be interested in a course that we run called The God Who Makes Himself Known. It's a short course that explains what the Bible is about and will give you an opportunity to understand it for yourself. Courses will be running in the new year, and if you'd like more details, please do ask. Well, thanks so much for listening. In a few moments, we're going to sing our next carol.